From the fifth canto, chapter 19, entitled The Island of Jamadvip, text 16 to 18. And it's all complicated. Bharate pyasmin varse sarichchalai santi bhavo mayo mangala prasto manake strikuttarisava kutakakulala sayu divakirir risayam kashi sailo vinkato mahindru vridar vindya suktiman rikshagiri pariyatru dronastit kutukovardhano raivakakakakabho Nilogo kamuko, Nilogo kamuka, Indrakila kamagiri iti chanye, chasatta sahasra saksailas ti sanditamba pravaha, nadanya dhrasta santi asankyataha. Something like that. Translation. In the tract of land known as Bharatvarsa, as in Ilavritavarsa, there are many mountains and rivers. Some of the mountains are known as Malaya, Mangalaprastha, Mainakatrikuta, Risava, Kutaka, Kulaka, Saya, Devagiri, Rishyamukha, Srisaira, Venkata, Mahendra, Varidara, Vindya, Shuktiman, Riksagiri, Pariyatra, Drona, Chitrakuta, Govanam, Raivataka, Kakup, Nila, Gokamukha, Indrakila, and Kamagiri. Besides these, there are many other hills with many large and small rivers flowing from their slopes. There's no purport. We can see that some of these mountains are mentioned elsewhere and are familiar to us. Like, for example, the Trikuta Mountains are mentioned in the story of Gajendra, who was there were three mountain peaks, and he was bathing in that lake, and then there was a mountain with three peaks, iron, gold, and silver peaks, and that was the Trikuta Mountain. So, okay, that one we know. We also know the Vindhya Mountains. The Vindhya Mountains are in central India, and they are dividing the Panchagoda provinces, the five northern provinces, and the Panchadravida provinces, the southern provinces. Govardhan, of course, we all know, hopefully. And then we have Chitrakut, which is related to Lord Ramachandra. We have, so not so far from Ayodhya, we have other mountains relating to Lord Ramachandra's pastimes, like Rishyamukha, a mountain that was there in the forest. Malaya, of course, the Malaya hills are described as having many forests with sandalwood trees on them, and these days the place is known as Malaysia. Yeah. So, like that, some of these hills we know. Sisaila, also in South India, also related to Ramachandra's pastimes. So then, I run out of fuel on the mountains. That's as much as I know about mountains. Then we continue with the next verses, 17 and 18. Ita sammapo badacha praja namabir eva punanti namatmana chupasprisanti chandravasa tamraparni avatodakritamala vaihaisi kaviri vini payasvini sarkara vartatunga badra krishna vinya bimarati godavari nirvindya Payusni tapiriva surasa narmada charmanvati sinduranda shonas chasanado mahanadi vedasmitiri sikulya trisama kusiki mandakini yamuna saraswati dristvati gomati sarayu rodasvati saptavati susoma suta druschandrabhaga marudbridda vitasta aksitni visveti mahanadya. And then we find a list of rivers, translation. Two of the rivers, the Brahmaputra and the Sona, are called nadas or main rivers. So the Brahmaputra is in Bangladesh, is an enormous river, very, very large. And there are other great rivers that are prominent, the Chandravasa, the Tamraparni, the Avato, the Kritamala, Yahyasi Kaveri Veni, Payasvini, Sakara Varta, Tunga Bhadra, Krishna Venya, Bhimarati, Godavari, Nirvindya, Payosni, Tapi, Rega, Surasananda, Charam, Manvati, Mahanadi, Veda, Smriti, Risikulya, Trisama, Kosiki, Mandakini, Yamuna, Saraswati, Drisvati, Gomati, Sarayu, Rodasvati, Saptavati, Suksoma, Satadru, Chandrabhaga, Marvrida, Vitasta, Aksikni and Vishwa. The inhabitants of Paravarsa are purified because they always remember these rivers. Sometimes they chant the names of these rivers as mantras, and sometimes they go directly to the rivers to touch them and bathe in them. Thus the inhabitants of Paravarsa become purified. Purport. All these rivers are transcendental. Therefore one can be purified by remembering them, touching them, or bathing in them. This practice is still going on. Om Ajnana Timanandasya Gyanandana Salakya Shakshura Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapanantikam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So Krishna is, in his causeless mercy, making many arrangements to distribute his mercy throughout the entire universe. So that the living beings can become purified. And we see that there are different degrees of that mercy of the Lord. There are rivers and mountains that are transcendental, as is described here. Bathing in such rivers is very auspicious and purifying. So we see that these rivers are everywhere, all over India, and one can take his bath in these rivers and become purified. So just to understand a little bit what kind of blessed place it is, it's not that people are making up these things. These things are actually revealed in the Vedic literatures. And therefore we understand that the land of Bharat or Bharatvarsa is particularly a place for those who are exalted and pious souls. Therefore Bharata Bhumite Hoilo Manushya Janma Dhamara Janma Satka Kara Paru Bukara. Therefore those who have taken their birth in the land of Bharat, they have a particular responsibility greater than any common man. They have the responsibility to distribute transcendental knowledge because they are blessed. And And they are therefore special living beings who are punyatamas, who are great pious souls, who then particularly as a reward for pious activities in a previous life, they are getting a birth in this land of Bharatvarsa. Srila Prabhupada quoted this verse many times, Bharata Bhumite Holo Manushya Janma Jara. He, of all Chaitanya Charitamrita verses, this was the one verse he quoted more than any other one. And again he stressed this point, that the inhabitants of Bharat, of India, had that particular responsibility. And he sometimes elaborated on it, describing how in that tract of land one naturally and automatically becomes Krishna conscious, just because the entire atmosphere is just full of mercy, full of transcendental knowledge. Mercy may be distributed all over the world, undoubtedly, but we see that the mercy in the land of Bharat is directly related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and in his original feature, and that makes it very special. We see prophets have appeared all over the world again and again, and there are places of pilgrimage related to either such prophets, or there are places in the world where some divine manifestations were there. The Catholics have their places also for example, Lourdes in France is a place of pilgrimage, or you have in Spain you have that pilgrimage route along Santiago de Compostela, and people are going there for purification, pilgrimages, prayers, and so on. And it's not just, again, it's not just a mental concoction. There are places that have the grace of the Lord, not only in India, but also outside of India. But there is a distinction, though. That India particularly is the land which is receiving special mercy, and where the nature of the Supreme Lord is directly revealed. It is in India that the script is known as Devanagari. Devanagari, which is actually the language of the demigods. So Sanskrit is not just a language of the demigods. Sanskrit is even the language of Vaikuntha. And as such, Sanskrit is from outside of the material world. I was once on an Indian train in Bengal, and there was a young Bengali boy dressed trendy in Bermuda shorts with a flowery design. So, and then as he saw me, he starts laughing and making gestures at my clothes. So, you know, I couldn't help myself. I kind of gestured back, you know, like, well, look at that, right? Flowery Bermudas, you know. And so then we continued our conversation, and I said, "So, you like those shorts?" He said, "Oh yes, I really do." I said, "You like them a lot?" He says, "Oh yes, I like them a lot." I said, "You wear them every day?" He says, "No, of course not every day. You know, some variety." I said, "Oh," I said, "but these clothes, these clothes, I wear them every day because they're spiritual and therefore fully satisfying." Then you don't need to change this way, that way. Okay, left him at that. With his mundane imitation of Hawaiian Bermuda shorts, which is representing the materialistic lifestyle of sense gratification. But the clothes, the dress of India is not Indian. Sometimes, especially in a country like Africa, where I spend plenty of time, in Africa there is a strong drive to be African. It's a big thing, right? To return to African roots, because under foreign subjugation, the local culture has been suppressed for a long time. So there's a strong African revival type of mood, and it has to be African. So then sometimes they say to devotees, like, why African devotees say, why are you wearing Indian dress? It's like, you know, betraying your own culture. How can you do this? Indian dress. It's not Indian dress. It is the dress from the spiritual world. Krishna wears a dhoti. It's not Indian folklore. Saris and dhotis are clothes of the spiritual world. And in that way, we see that the culture of India is transparent to the spiritual world. It's said that there are 16,108 spiritual ragas. First of all, it is said that every living being has his own raga. So somehow or other, we produce a sound and it can be counted as a raga. But amongst all these ragas, there are 16,108 ragas which are spiritual. And these ragas are chanted by the 16,108 gopis. Right? And therefore, these are spiritual ways of singing, spiritual melodies. So we find that such ragas have entered into the culture of India. Not only spiritual ragas, also ragas that are relating to the modes of nature, but then that are coming down from the realms of the demigods and so on. And all this kind of knowledge has been revealed. So that's quite amazing. How transparent that land of Bharat is. Of course, Srila Prabhupada also told us that Vedic culture is dead, and we are seeing the remnants of Vedic culture. But then he said, just like an elephant. An elephant, even when it's dead, it's still valuable. That's the nature of an elephant. It's ivory, the bones, the skin, whatever. Still valuable. So Vedic culture, although it is really no longer available, it is the remnants of Vedic culture are still very, very valuable and also still very present in India. I remember I was in Rajasthan, and we were looking for artisans who could do work for the samadhi of Srila Prabhupada in Mayapur, some carving work. And we drove on the road to Jaipur, and then we went off the main road into the villages. And then we heard there was somewhere a village where they were carving, and I asked the local farmer how far it was. And he said, oh, it's 8 krosas. Right? We go, krosas. How much is a krosa? Right? But you have to look in the Bhagavatam, right, to actually find out a krosa. So, but they still have these measurements, the measurements that are found in the Vedic scriptures, which are all relating, to divine culture, After all, the essence of all Vedic knowledge is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vasudeva Paraveda. It is said that Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the ultimate understanding of all knowledge or of all of Veda. And therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead existing in the spiritual world, in his abode with all his divine opulences, with his eternal associates, performing his eternal pastimes, is basically the foundation of existence in this world. This is described as Yattar Barka Pratibimba, that like a boy who is playing with his own reflection, sitting on the bank of a body of water, he's looking at his reflection and he's making movements and he's seeing that the reflection is also responding. So in the same way, the material energy is the reflection of the spiritual world. Therefore, we see all the variety in the material world is indicative of the spiritual world. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is that young Avadhuta Brahmana who is having various spiritual masters in the material energy. He's seeing the spider, and he sees how the spider makes a web. A spider may come down from the ceiling on a thread, and then the spider climbs back up on the thread. Now, if a mountaineer would do such a thing, right, then he would have to roll up the rope as he would go back up, and he would like have a huge ball of rope on his back. But we don't see spiders with like big balls of a web that has just been rolled up and carrying this big web around. No, it just disappears in their body again. So the Avadhuta Brahmana from this was remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his form of Mahavishnu, and how from the pores of his body unlimited universes are manifesting, and then on the rhythm of his breath coming out and going back in. And as the universes again are absorbed in the body of Mahavishnu, in the same way the web was absorbed in the body of the spider. And in that way he saw how this is a reflection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he remembered the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Many spiritual masters he had. One that comes to mind is the arrow maker. There was an arrow maker who tried to make a perfectly straight arrow, which obviously is not so easy, but important, because otherwise how can it hit the target? So in full concentration, he was trying to make this arrow. It is said that day the emperor was coming to the city, and there was a huge parade. You know how it is when emperors come, there are music bands and this and that and whatever is, it's a whole parade. It's not just the emperor came through the street. So the parade came right through the street where the arrow maker had his workshop. And he never ever, later when he was asked, what did you think of the emperor and the whole parade and everything? He said, the parade? What are you talking about? He didn't notice a thing. He was completely absorbed. So the Avadhuta Brahmana in this way learned that if one is completely absorbed in always remembering Krishna, that one is not distracted by the illusory energy. No matter how colorful and how impressive Maya's arrangements are, one who is deeply absorbed in remembering the Supreme Lord is never ever distracted by Maya. So in this way, he learned many things from the material energy. So that is very important. So the very fact that there are so many holy rivers that are all transcendental, and so many amazing mountains also of different degrees of transcendence, just seeing these descriptions, it tells us something about the nature of the Supreme Lord. It tells us that the Supreme Lord, although he is Atmaram, although he is fully satisfied within himself, and although he is residing in the spiritual world and engaged in unlimited nectar pastimes, and is just the ocean of transcendental bliss, which is eternally increasing, so Krishna is just relishing in the spiritual world. But in spite of relishing in the spiritual world and just being completely absorbed in endless loving exchanges with so many devotees, he doesn't forget the material world. And he makes still so many arrangements for the living beings in the material world. Endless arrangements to purify them, to remind them, to somehow or other bring them to a point where they again consciously become devotees. And he makes all the arrangements. And we see that he particularly reciprocates with his devotees. That especially he is intimately inclined towards his devotees. Because especially in the land of Bharat, we see a high concentration of mercy. Especially there, where the devotees reside, there is so much mercy. So much mercy. So in this way, we can see how Krishna is kind to all living beings and how he's particularly inclined towards his devotees. Therefore, when we get this whole description here in the fifth canto of the universe, and we get long lists of names of rivers and mountains and islands, and it looks like a geography lesson. And I remember particularly in school, in primary school, when it came to the geography of Russia, I go, it's such a big country, and there were just so many places, right? All with impossible names, right? Endless impossible names that you couldn't remember and couldn't relate to anything. And I had to, learn all these things. It was agony. So finally, we had on the attic in our house, we had a wooden wall, and I drew the map of Russia with chalk on the wall and wrote down the names of all those cities. And then I threw darts on the map as a way to learn. And I remember particularly throwing my darts at Dnepropetrovsk, right? And I was thinking, why in the world do I have to learn where this place Dnepropetrovsk is, right? Never ever in my life I'm going to go to Dnepropetrovsk. And I threw my dart, with great conviction. So far, I didn't go to Dnepropetrovsk. Although I've seen videos of Dnepropetrovsk, and that there are many really nice devotees in Dnepropetrovsk, and that they have amazing harinams and so on. So I feel some attraction to go to Dnepropetrovsk, and it's just my false ego that holds me back, right? That vow that I took as a child is still harassing me today. Anyway, so we see that the Lord is making endless arrangements to deliver the conditioned souls. And what looks like geography is not at all geography. The Bhagavatam has these kind of sections. It has a section here of names of rivers and mountains. In the ninth canto, you have the dynasties, right? You have endless names, and this king married that one, and they had four sons, and they were named so and so and so and so, and they had children, and they were named this and this and this, endless list of names, and it's where the mind goes. Maybe I'll skip this part of the Bhagavatam. what's the next chapter? But actually, all these names are auspicious, because all these names purify us, because all these names are names of either blessed places, blessed rivers, blessed mountains, blessed personalities, and just hearing these names, one is blessed. Yeah. The dynasties are described, and the Lord appeared in such dynasty, and so on. Then the whole dynasty is blessed. What piety is there? So in this way, one can appreciate that Bhagavatam is not, reading Bhagavatam is not just an intellectual process, but Srimvata Svagata Krishna Punya Sravana Kirtanam Ridiyantasto Yavadrani Vidunati Saritsatam. That this transcendental sound enters within the heart, and there it acts and purifies and transforms the nature of our heart. And therefore, whether we find a particular section of Bhagavatam exciting or not exciting, it doesn't matter. It is purifying. Just hearing such descriptions. Well, that is... So that is how Bhagavatam works. And Prabhupada had that faith. Prabhupada used to say things, if people just touch a book, they become purified. If there is a book in their house, the whole house becomes a temple. Things like that. On a Janmashtami in the early days of ISKCON, when no translations were available, Prabhupada just read Sanskrit slokas and saying, you may not understand, but that doesn't matter. You get purified. So being conditioned souls, we have particular portions that we like and portions that we don't like, and so on. Just as with Mahaprasad, we have certain types of Mahaprasad we like, certain. Even in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is described that Raghunath Das Goswami start surviving on the leftover rice that was thrown out from the Mahaprasadam, from the Jagannath temple. So, see, the rice is equally transcendental as the Malpuras, right? But somehow or other, the Malpuras are never left over, but the rice is. But Raghunath Das was so transcendental that he could appreciate that even although that rice was rotten, that still it was Mahaprasadam. So he washed it in water until the rotten, soft outside core of the rice would come off and the hard inside part remained. Then he would eat that with salt. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu one day came, said, Raghunath, what nectar are you eating? No, my Lord, no, this... Give me some... No, this is not... No, give me some of that. Raghunath tried to stop the Lord, but he could not. And Lord Chaitanya snatched some of it. Oh, this is the best prasadam I ever had. You are having the greatest nectar. So in this way, Lord Chaitanya was appreciating the Mahaprasadam on a transcendental platform. And he was also appreciating Raghunath's transcendental vision in this regard. So it is like that. Prasadam is like that. The Bhagavatam is like that. Devotional service is like that. One cannot say, I like this service, I don't like that service, or one can say, but and in the conditioned state, that may be relevant. But in the transcendental state, it is all mercy. It is all auspicious. It is all subhada. It is all connected with Krishna, and it is the direct flow of mercy of, for Krishna. For example, in the Bhagavatam, we see that the descent of the Ganges, and I always like the part where it is described that the demigods were catching the Ganga as it was coming down in kumbhas, and they carried it. So one can appreciate that the demigods, they understood, here comes the mercy of the Lord. And they were thinking, they were not just thinking, well, let's catch it. No, they were thinking, how can we get the maximum benefit? And we get the maximum benefit when we are partaking in distributing it. Therefore, let's catch it and carry it and just help to distribute it. Because then we get the maximum benefit of it. Just see. Sankirtan devotees. Very intelligent. So this is truly the way to get the maximum benefit of transcendental knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam is by saptaparechanisnatam, bathing ourselves in that transcendental sound vibration and then widely distributing it. And that is truly the way to get the greatest benefit of reading Srimad Bhagavatam. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that he says the Bhagavatam in the beginning, in the middle, and in the end is describing pure devotional service to Krishna. So that is really what we are looking at here. So any verse in Bhagavatam is always describing pure devotional service to Krishna. So we have to sometimes look a little bit, like at the rivers here. But this is what we are reading about, exclusively, about pure devotional service of Krishna. To understand that the geography is sacred is also very important. Srimad Bhagavatam is describing to us how the entire creation is related to Krishna. Not only that Krishna is the origin of both spiritual and material energies, but it also shows in every aspect how everything is related to the Supreme Lord, how it's emanating from Him, and then we see how His mercy is invested in particular parts in the universe. And in this way, we see Krishna everywhere. So Bhagavatam very thoroughly helps us to bring us to the point to always see Krishna. Everywhere. Stavara jangama dekena dekatara murti sarvata haista deva spurti. That wherever we see, whether it is a moving object or a non-moving object, whatever it may be, we don't actually see its form, we see Krishna. Because we see everything in relation with Krishna. So Bhagavatam very thoroughly helps us to see everything in relation with Krishna. And in that way, awakens our natural Krishna consciousness. Not that we have to constantly cultivate it, not that the iron is always cold, and that then we have to again warm it up in the fire until it's hot again. No, that it just stays hot, and that it's just natural that we naturally always remember Krishna. Not that we need just 20 people at the end of our life as we are on our deathbed to scream in our ears, Hare Krishna, to pour some some tulsi, some in our mouths, right? Pour Ganga Jal all over us, or whatever, or you know. Of course, all these things, yes, we want, you know, by all means, you know. If I'm croaking and you have some of these items, yes, bring. Right? But the remembrance of Krishna is very natural, and is naturally awakening in us until one naturally sees Krishna everywhere. So Krishna consciousness, as Srila Prabhupada said, is not an artificial imposition on the mind. Rather, it is an awakening, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema. That Krishna Prema is there, Sravanadi Sudha Chitta Kaya Udai. It is awakening, especially by hearing and chanting. And therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam is playing such a central role in the process of reawakening our natural Krishna consciousness. With that, I think I spoke plenty. If there is anyone who has a question, please.
Similarly, spiritual topics that you mentioned, like the rivers, taking care of the cows, they're threatened nowadays. You know, there's cow slaughter in India increasing. The Jamuna practically has disappeared, and sewage has been substituted. Then there's invasions by Muslims that corrupts the holy places. So I'm wondering, is it also pure devotional service to fight against all these things?
Dham Seva is mentioned as devotional service. So yes, that is also pure devotional service to protect and maintain the transcendental nature, or the transparency of the cover of the Dham. Because what we're really looking at, the Dham is covered by a layer of yoga maya, which makes it appear like a little piece of India, village, small town, with all its hustle and bustle and so on. And it looks like the Yamuna is halted in Delhi by a monstrous dam and polluted, and that whatever impurities are reaching Vrindavan are only for a very small percentage Yamuna. And devotees have organized great protests, and particularly Radha Jivan, that has been the inspiration of all that protest, and has slept on the steps of the Indian Parliament with thousands of people and these kind of things. Yeah. So they've taken it up very seriously, and that is devotional service, because if we are keeping the covering of the Dham transparent, so that the transcendental nature of the Dham can come true, then a lot of people are getting the mercy of the Lord through the Dham. So that is important. But we should also understand is that at the same time there's an internal manifestation of the Dham. And that is eternal. That is not affected at all by the external pollution or whatsoever. So the Yamuna is still there. That should also be understood. It's not that the Yamuna is not there. The Yamuna is also there. And one who even takes his bath in that sewage with the conviction that here is the Yamuna, is actually taking bath in the Yamuna to the extent that his devotional service is pure and is getting mercy. So there is still transcendental mercy in all those sincere pilgrims who are taking their dips in the Yamuna. We should not say, ah, that's not the Yamuna. You know, no, it is still the Yamuna. We cannot think it's not. Mm. That is the. But it is a service to be transparent to the Dhamma. And I was temple president of Vrindavan, and I did service for a long time in Vrindavan. And so we became very conscious that that was our service, to somehow or other try and fulfill Srila Prabhupada's desires for Vrindavan, to create, and then to create an atmosphere which was transparent to the eternal nature of the Dhamma. That was the best thing we could do there. Not get in the way, kind of, you know, which is very easy to get in the way of the transcendental nature of the Dhamma. Just bring a Harley Davidson and, you know, and an air conditioner and like lots of sound systems and just bring cars and bring tarred roads and just put it on top of the Parikram mark, and gradually it becomes a little difficult to perceive Vrindavan Dham. But it hasn't changed a bit. It's still there. Therefore, maybe more difficult to see. It used to be so nice, you know, just behind our Krishnabharan temple, Raman Reti, and you would go there in the afternoon, all the cows were resting there under the Krishna Balaram tree, which is no more. Now, there's no more Krishna Balaram tree, there are no more cows, there are apartments there. And then at 6 o'clock at night, all the maybe 30 peacocks would all go into the trees to get ready for resting for the night, and you could sit there, chant some japa, and see all the peacocks go in and hear them give a last cry before taking rest. And then in the morning, you'd wake up at 3 o'clock and there's this wave of peacock sound going up and down through Vrindavan. All that is no more to be heard. Right? Now you hear some loudspeakers blasting. That's about it. Yeah. Whatever may be, the eternal nature hasn't changed. Anyone else? Bishop.
In the list of rivers and mountains, it seems that they're all transcendental, but some are more transcendental,
yeah,
and some are less transcendental.
True. Govardhan was there.
Yes. So does that more and less transcendental also extend to Prasadam?
To Prasadam.
Which are the deities, which
is Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, it does. It is Krishna manifesting himself more or less. I went to one particular temple which in Jaipur, which carries the name of a very prominent business family. And, you know, there was a nice deity of Lord Narayan. And there was some prasad, you know, we asked Pujari some prasad, and then yes, they had some prasad, just those little white sugary balls, you know, like these tiny things. Take two or three. Everyone takes like that. And that was all they were offering. There was no cooking, there were no offerings for the Lord. That was it. That was prasad. We also may go to a supermarket, read the label, and, you know, and the label is kosher, and we may quickly speak some mantras if we do, and offer it and say prasadam. But it's not but then we remember how when Nimai had taken sannyas, that somehow or other by tricks of Nityananda he was brought to the house of Advaitacharya. And then all the devotees of Navadvip, they came to see him with great eagerness. And Mother Sachi also was brought in a palanquin, and she came and she knew, this is going to be the last time I'm seeing Nimai. And she said, please grant me one favor, and that only I may cook for him during this time. And Mother Sachi cooked. And she cooked like she had never cooked before. She put everything in those preparations. Every little bit of love that she had, every little bit of attention, devotion, it was all in there. And when the devotees were tasting the Mahaprasadam after it had been offered, they were swooning in ecstasy and whatever, falling on the ground. They had never tasted anything like that. I mean, so there is prasadam and prasadam. There is no doubt about it. And, so all these rivers are purifying. It is said, and of all of them, the Ganga is still more purifying than all these sacred rivers. But then the Yamuna is still more purifying, like sometimes said 100 times, 1,000 times more purifying. So like this, we are there are degrees of mercy. Sometimes depending on which manifestation of the Lord is related to the particular place. There are places, for example, in Gaya, there is a footprint of Lord Vishnu in the rock, and people go there and offer milk and pinda and this and that. So that's very auspicious. Right? But yet, you know, a place directly related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govardhan, that's still another level of mercy. So the mercy relates to the particular manifestation of the Lord that was there. Or maybe the particular devotion of a devotee. I went to Tompkins Square Park to the tree. Such a wonderful place, and so nice that the city council has recognized it, and there's a sign, right? And that the sign is saying Hare Krishna tree, and next to the road there is a board with an explanation that the founder of the International Society of Krishna Consciousness, etc., started chanting Hare Krishna under this tree, started this movement here. So very nice. And I'm under the tree, you know, sort of, well, I'm not so much, I'm Dutch, you know, we are a very sober Protestant country, so I'm not so romantic and not so much a tree hugger. But this tree, now you have these devotees, they go around Vrindavan, they have to hug every tree. It's too un-Dutch to do something like that, you know. But this tree, I did it, right? So I just hugged the tree and turn around, and there is one boy, and this boy is saying, what do I have to do to become a monk like you? And I go, where does he come from? This is just under this tree. That's amazing. This desire tree, right? So great devotees, right, can also transform places and trees and turn them into desire trees. And wherever Prabhupada went, it became a place of pilgrimage. And I'm always thinking of how Prabhupada once said that whoever gives me tickets for me, my secretary, and a few tickets, plus puts $1,000 in my book fund, that's where I'll go. And Ridayananda Maharaj said, okay, and invited Prabhupada to Gainesville. Now, as far as I'm concerned, Gainesville is in the whoops, in the sticks. It's in the middle of nowhere, right? It's in the boondocks. Right? But Prabhupada went there, and now right next to Gainesville is the biggest community that ISKCON has. And I don't think that's just by chance. That's because Prabhupada graced that place. So wherever Prabhupada went, he transformed these places and invested them with transcendental potency. Like that. And of course, not only Prabhupada, so many great personalities. Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami's deities, Radha Govinda in Jaipur, hey, they're Rupa Goswami's deities, right? So, you know, Rupa Goswami prayed. That prayer still stands. Deities installed by Prabhupada. Oh, huh? Jagannath, here, on the right. Those Prabhupada personally installed. Yeah. All right, special mercy is there. Prabhupada's prayer, when he asked the Lord to manifest himself, makes Krishna manifest a little more. Because the deity, Krishna manifests himself in the deity according to the devotion. And if the worship is very poor, he may withdraw himself. And as the deity is worshipped with great devotion, yes, the more and more he manifests that mercy. So like that. It's not all deities are the same, and all prasada is the same, and every holy place is the same. So anyway, thank you very much. That's it. Or last.
A short comment. Originally, I live very close to Dnipropetrovsk, if you like. So now it belongs to Ukraine, and it's a really nice place with beautiful temples. So I'm sure that Ukrainian would be happy.
Oh, God.
Gosh. God. Oh, no. Oh God! What if I wind up in Dniepropetrovsk? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Thank you.